Hello and welcome to the Lost World of Short Stories. I am your host, Lauren Tate, and I see we've had some listeners tuning in from Canada and tuning in from Vietnam. So, hello! That makes me so happy. Hello, 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 and welcome. I hope you keep on listening and keep coming back for more. And for those of you who don't know and who do know, today is Feature Friday. It's the meat of the podcast and the main reason why we are all here. If you enjoy Feature Friday, tell us about it, guys. You can review the podcast on the Anchor app, Apple Podcasts, CastBox, and on my website, laurentatebooks.com. That's LaurentateBooks.com. There's a page for testimonials if you want to see what others are saying about it. And if you hover over it, there's a subpage called Review. The page is just a short, simple review form. You write your review and click Submit. It's super easy. The review comes to my email and I post it the very next day. Reviews are important for any business. They help bring new customers and in this case, bring new listeners. I hope to grow this community here at the Lost World of Short Stories, and with your review, we can all accomplish that goal. And we can continue on to season two. And speaking of season two, if you are a Black woman who writes poetry, short stories, personal essays, spoken word, or my new favorite that we are welcoming on the podcast, skits. Yes. I said skits. Of any genre, if you are a Black girl, Black woman, and you write or know someone else who does, listen to our super short bonus episodes titled Open Submissions, Black Women Writers, and Calling Black Women Indie Authors and Singers / Songwriters to be featured on season two of The Lost World of Short Stories. That will be in March, and y'all don't want to miss out on being a part of season two because it's just gonna keep getting better. I want to hear from you guys because your stories are worth telling. And as for season one of The Lost World of Short Stories, you know that it's coming to an end. There is only one more week left and two more episodes to go. One more Wednesday Literature Nugget and one more Feature Friday. And you don't want to miss any of it. So get excited because we still have a little bit left to go and we will be back. Now, I know you are excited to get into Feature Friday, but I just need you to hold on a little bit longer because today it's going to be a journey, but we're going to make it through together if you're going to stick with me. I promise. I never talked this long in the intro, so bear with me because it is for a purpose. So there's two things. I wanted to let you know that you can send in voice messages as in the form of questions. If you want to ask questions, if you just want to talk about the poetry, to tell me about the poems or whatever else you want to engage with on the podcast. So shout out to my mom, who is my number one supporter. And she sent in a voice message because she genuinely had a question concerning last Friday's episode when we had Maya Perkins on discussing her book, The Walking Nerve Ending. When we were discussing that, we talked about her food and travels, and because she was talking about it in her book, and she brought up this sandwich that was like extremely delicious, and she kept talking about it, and I honestly spaced out probably, and I forgot to ask her about it, and my mom was very excited, so this is what she said.
Hi, I'm Marion from Detroit, Michigan. My question is about Mai's duck sandwich that she had when she was traveling. She made it sound so good, and so I wanted to know what made the sandwich so delicious. It was a duck sandwich, but what kind of bread did it have? What kind of spices did it have to make it taste so wonderful? Thank you.
Okay, so thank you, Mama, for that submission. I was really happy that she did that. And I reached out to Mai and asked her about the sandwich, and it is called a duck confit. And I looked it up because I wanted to know what the confit meant, and it means to cook in its own fat until it breaks down. So I thought that was interesting. And this sandwich that Mai had, it was served in Helsinki, Finland at the Flying Dutch restaurant, which is housed in a charming boat around the corner from Hilton Hotel on the Baltic Sea. She tagged me in a picture that she had posted, and it literally looks so delicious. I think I'm going to post a picture of the sandwich on my Instagram story because y'all just have to see the sandwich. But I'm going to try my best to describe it anyway. the sandwich, it has nice chunks of duck in it, like that you can see how the confit part was saying that when you cook it in its own fat until it breaks down, so it looks really tender, it looks really juicy. It's really, really big piece of meat on very tiny pieces of bread. The bread looks small and the bread is small and it's seeded and it looks lightly toasted. And then the sandwich has like some cheese in it, looks a little shredded, some blocks of cheese on top of the big chunk of duck that you get, and then like some crispy fresh lettuce, and then like slithers of tomatoes, and maybe a little sauteed onion on it. That's what it looks like to me, a little sauteed onion. Yeah, and the bun is so tiny, I can't even see the bottom bun, like the contents of the sandwich just take up the whole picture, and I love that. They're like, here it is. So those are the answers. I did my best to explain it. If you do follow me on social media, I will post a picture of it in my story because I do want to share the picture. It's epic. So thank you, Mai, for clarification and where you got it and how it looked. And thank you to my mother who sent in the question. Okay, so now I'm going to stop talking and I hope you guys enjoyed today's Feature Fridays and I'll be back a little later on in the episode. Okay.
Not a Compliment, written by Taylor Thigpen, read by Emma Jackson. You pretty for a black girl. Why even tack that on at the end? Why not just leave it at you're pretty? The subtle passive aggression can leave a bitter taste, shoulders slumping ever so slightly. Thanks. You're pretty for a black girl. Elation and sadness fighting for dominance, leaving an internal hurricane in its wake, bashful eyelashes kissing cheeks. Thanks. You're pretty for a black girl. Insecurities abound for words once spoken, creating a frown where a smile was replaced, broken eye contact, labeled weak. Thanks. But what I really want to say is, thanks so much. Go fuck yourself. Take the compliment that's not a compliment and shove it down your throat. Thanks. You pretty for a black girl. Intersectionality of only three self-identifiers. Standing taller, shoulders back, nose turns up, eyes as fierce as a smoking ace. I'm pretty and not for a black girl. Thanks.
Just like fireworks in the twilight, you excite me. You make my skin warm and fill my eyes with heat. I attempt to run from the flames, but the smoke clouds my way. The excitement, the high, the rush that you provide seems well worth the burn. We dance hard, heart to heart, however separated by the blaze. This dangerous, fancy footwork feels like foreplay. I weep at the thought of being just foreplay. We hold hands and sear our palms. Fingers intertwined while we close eyes and cross the line. You feel like home, but you're more like the neighbor's beach house. No for sale signs in sight, but that side door swings open with the wind. Burglary isn't my crime of choice. I won't enter without keys. Please release me until you're prepared to do more. Then lease me. I break away from your grasp fast. I cry as I come down from my high. The water rises behind me. Either way, I'm gonna die. Toes tickled by the sand, I firmly stand. Backing into the waves means swimming into a daze, guaranteed to consume my nights, dreaming of the days I could feel your warmth. To reach for you and step forward sets the stage for the beach's view in torment or bitch's brew. But why do you feel so for me? I can appreciate a riot, even the quiet ones. Our song is quite some tune, harps harping and golden drums beat by Oshun, the ocean, the fire. Your eyes wide and deep like the feelings I keep in a lockbox free from fuckery. I'm mesmerized by the flame, only distracted by the calling of my name. When you say my name like that, I can't turn away. I melt from the inside out as I fall into your arms, safe from harm. I find solace as you cradle me longer than the day of a summer solstice. The fire remains lit. The addiction of the drug called desire brings me into your home, where I'll simmer until I expire.
Have you ever been told that you wouldn't amount to anything? Have you ever felt like you had to fight for your life? Have you ever thought about giving up? Imagine being told as a mother that you're only child born at 1 pound and 10 ounces had a 25% chance of surviving. 25% is well below passing. 25% is not even average. Well, what do you do with those odds? Despite the hardships my mom faced, she did not believe what was told to her, and I'm forever grateful for that. I'm grateful that she chose to fight for my life, even though she couldn't fight for hers. Oftentimes, people give up on you before they even know your potential. The doctors didn't see any potential in me due to my mother's drug addiction. I'm grateful that my mother was able to see the potential within me and believed in me. See, I stand before you today, created with purpose and a destiny to be successful. I stand before you today to tell you that it's possible to evolve through your truth. My name is Ashley Watkins. I was born and raised on the east side of Detroit, 7 Mile to be exact. Now you may hear this story and think that by growing up in a home with a physically abusive mother who constantly tells you that you aren't worthy will make you think that you won't amount to anything. How is it that the person who brought you into this world is the same person who can put you down? How is it that the same person who tells you to defend yourself and stand your ground is the same person who beats on you and makes you weak? Listen, don't get me wrong. I love my mother and I'm forever grateful. But it wasn't easy. I wanted to give up, but I had to prove her wrong. I stand before you today, a healed woman who's certain of her purpose.
I really enjoyed today's poems and the readings of the poems. My favorite had to be Emma Jackson reading Not a Compliment. As a Black girl, I absolutely relate heavily to this poem. Even though no one has ever come up to me or told me personally, like, you're pretty for a Black girl, I know that it happens too often to Black girls and women, no matter the shade, but especially darker tones. And people are just so ignorant because, you know, they say, like, you're pretty to be a Black girl as if it's a compliment, which is why I believe Taylor titled the poem Not a Compliment, because the bottom line is it isn't. It's rude and it's a backhanded insult, and it's as if you're saying, I'm pretty, but only in this box I put you in. You're pretty for where you are, but you could be better. Or like, Black girls aren't usually attractive, but you've made to prove me wrong. That's how the compliment in quotation marks is really interpreted. Like, if you think a Black girl is pretty, just say, hey, I think you're pretty, and move along. There's no need for anything else to be said. And I'm so glad that so many Black women and girls are coming to understand and embrace how beautiful they are, and that their skin is not something to be ashamed of or to be mocked. It's a wondrous sight to behold. And let's be honest, people outside of our culture pay and steal to get what we have, and then have the audacity to tell us that we aren't worthy. And that's just not true. It's a bold-faced lie. It's just, you know, we are fearfully and wonderfully made, and nobody can do anything about it. So I'm glad at the progress that we've made just as a people together. And then we have Toxic Tango by Chanel, bringing the sensuality and the sexuality into the conversation. And I would just like to state that Chanel's voice is very calming, and it has like a sort of twang to it, which is very nice. I messaged Chanel on her thoughts and perspective on her poem because I wanted to know from her, besides putting my own spin on it for this one. So I messaged her on Facebook, and, you know, I was just like, hey, you know, to myself, I was like, hey, I know the author who wrote the piece. Why not just ask her? And so I'm really glad I did. And this is what she said. She said, Toxic Tango is about forbidden love and the fight between your heart and your brain. I wrote this poem for everyone who knows what it's like to love someone who was in love with someone else. The battle between your emotions and what's logical can feel very much like a dangerous dance. A toxic tango, as the title states. And I was just like, whoa, like playing with fire, you know, knowing good and well, you know, that person is not for you, is not good for you, but you're so invested emotionally and physically that you can't break away, and it literally becomes your destruction. And we were talking about this in another episode, you know, letting things control you or be so much a part of you that you don't know how to tie away, and that it's creating a certain soul tie to that thing. And people act like you can just break off a soul tie whenever you feel like it, like, oh, I can just get up and be away from this person and out of the situation. But when you've been living in something for so long, it's really hard to find a new reality. And when your life is led by how you feel, even when you know it's wrong, you know, when you started down a path that is toxic, chasing after a thing or a person that is incapable of loving you back. Side note, this is also for people who love money, okay, because that's like a really big thing in our culture. People love money, and money ain't gonna love you back. Like, it's a thing to have, but it's not gonna love you back. So y'all not skipping in this conversation. So, but when you're chasing after a thing or a person that is incapable of loving you back, it's hard to get off the path and keep your sanity and not lose who you are. And most of the time you lose yourself in the process, then you have to come out of it, like I said, rediscovering who you are. And it takes redirection, right? And I'm just so glad that I asked Chanel about this poem, Toxic Tango, that she's written, and its meaning, because like she said, I think a lot of people can relate to being in that place, can understand the struggle between their heart and their logic, journeying through that hard place and choosing ultimately, you know, to want more for yourself. So I'm really glad about that. And then the last poem is The Beginning by Ashley Watkins. And it's written and read by Ashley Watkins. When she sent me the transcript of her poem, she originally sent it in to be read by a voice actor, and I read it and I was like, absolutely not. This is all you. This is your journey. No one else can tell it but you. It's like her origin story, you know, no one else could tell it but her. So she sent me a recording of her reading it, and here we are now on the podcast, and I'm glad that you guys had a chance to listen to that. And if you need to play it back, because I listen to these poems multiple times just to get different perspectives and hear the voices, and I like the creative process of it, and I believe poetry is meant to be read and heard and spoken multiple times, because we come to it. And we come to it in different ways every time we interact with it. So in the poem, The Beginning, she starts off by saying, have you ever been told that you wouldn't amount to anything? Have you ever thought about giving up? Yes. Like, yes. Not the first one for me, but, you know, definitely giving up. Absolutely. I mean, what human being hasn't thought of giving up, right? Just in our dreams, trying to, you know, figure out what we're going to do in our careers, in our day to day. Okay. Just daily to daily tasks, daily responsibilities. You're like, I can just throw this all away. And That's a hard thought, but it's a thought of humanity because it's what we have as humans, and it's fine to feel that way. But like I always say, just, you know, don't stay there. And in this poem, the beginning, or in this story, the beginning, it's not really a poem, but it's kind of like a short story. Like I said, her origin story. She talks about how she's overcoming the odds, being born with defeat placed on her by her circumstance, but knowing that that's not what her purpose lied in, that's not what her identity was in. Despite the hardships her mom faced, her mom didn't believe the lie of what people had told her. And the fact that she believed for something more, that her daughter was going to live and be brought into this world, despite what it looked like, that belief was placed in her daughter, you know, like it kind of planted a seed there. And oftentimes people give up on you before they even know your potential. And in the story, she says, I stand here before you today, created with purpose. So which is the whole transformation, because in the story, she also talks about, even though her mother had believed her coming into the world, she had belief for that. Her mother, on the flip side, was physically abusive, who told her she wasn't worthy. And she says, in the story, the same mother who brought me into this world put me down. The same person who told me to defend myself and stand my ground is the same person that made me weak. And, you know, she says, I stand before you, a healed woman who's certain of her purpose. And weren't we talking about for this whole season, healing and self-acceptance and knowing who you are and how hard that can be? You don't just wake up. Every person doesn't just wake up and just steps into what they're destined to be. Most of us have to figure it out. And it's not an easy journey. And certainly it's not easy, you know, overcoming an abusive parent, fighting thoughts of unworthiness and anything else you might be dealing with. But the bottom line is, you're worth it. It takes work, and you can't go looking anywhere else to find that answer. For me, that was God. But if there's anything you guys get out of this first season from the Wednesday episodes or the Friday episodes, it's in the power of reflection. Whether you believe in God or not, y'all need to learn. We need to learn together, okay, how to reflect. And you don't have to write nothing down, but journaling, whether you physically doing it or in your mind, or, you know, however you want to do that, it needs to be done, because when you realize where you've been, it can certainly help you where you're going, and then why you do the things that you do, why you're acting the way you act, why you get an attitude about this certain thing and you shut out people for this other thing. You know, reflection helps so much with that. And so I've definitely learned how to do it over these last 5 years, and it's been a beautiful journey. And so when I meet other women who are younger than me, older than me, I encourage them to do that if they're not doing it already. And so we find similarities and differences in our journeys, and other things that you're able to reflect on can help another person. And we gotta learn to love people where they're at, with their issues and their brokenness. And it's not about agreeing with everybody, because that's not logical, nor is it right. But it's about loving on folks despite what they did to you, despite how they act. It doesn't mean you gotta be their friend either, but practice love and kindness, because not only is showing someone else love and kindness in their mess, even if they don't receive it right away, it's a blessing to them. Not only is it a blessing to them, but it's a blessing to you. And sometimes healing and evolving in everything that we are doesn't always look like just being about us, being about our issues, our mess, our insecurities. Sometimes while we're helping somebody else, even in a small way, we get an answer that we needed in the process. So just remember, if anything, stepping into your potential and everything that is meant for you and everything that God has for you, it takes work. And you have to ask yourself if you're bold enough to take the first step, right? And you got to remember that you're not alone. I mean, God is right there with you, whether you believe it or not. I believe it for you, that he is with you. And I just hope you guys are enjoying Feature Friday so far. And don't go anywhere, because we have an interview, as always, a wonderful woman named Terry Lopez, and her book titled A Tale of Hezekiah and Hephzibah. And because I didn't really do it justice when trying to summarize it, and because for the first part of the interview the audio was very fuzzy and not clear, it was going in and out, I'm going to read you all the summary. Actually, yes, I'm going to read you all the summary right now that she wrote for the book, so you just understand the context and I'm going to tell you guys just a little bit about the interview before you listen in on the conversation between Terry and I, because like I said, it wasn't clear for some parts. A lot of parts were clear. Okay. So the summary reads, and this is the book, A Tale of Hezekiah and Hephzibah by Terry Lopez. So it reads, A Tale of Hezekiah and Hephzibah by Terry Lopez chronicles how turbulent our lives can be. Nevaeh grows up in a broken home, and not known to her, she has a guardian angel who fights those who rise against her. After a short, sad life, Nevaeh experiences a horrifying death. Nevaeh is sent back to Earth as Candace, who appears to have it all from the outside. Her difficult marriage and problematic son cause her continuous grief. When she meets Apollo and his charming daughter, Candace quickly becomes attached to them. The characters in A Tale of Hezekiah and Hephzibah by Terry Lopez face complex problems. Lopez takes readers on both the spiritual and natural journey of creative characters whose lives mirror those of the average human today. Filled with twists and turns, bumps and bruises, mishaps and missteps, this biblically based innovative piece proves that a life without struggle, strain, or stress simply does not exist. Life is never scripted. It's often a series of making small or large adjustments to things that happen, which are usually out of our control. But when you're fighting the urge to be with someone you love, despite it not being the right person, the right time, or the right circumstances, life can become a bit more challenging. In this literary roller coaster ride, readers will be challenged to believe in love again, search for soulmates again, even when it doesn't have the cliche happily ever after ending one may desire. Although people may fall or fail, this written masterpiece serves as a reminder that humans are versatile and often always recover. After all, could it be the very things we think are causing a slow death could be God's way of life preservation? So she did a beautiful job of explaining it through the summary, and a few short things that I want to clarify in the interview, because that I want to clarify now before you listen to the interview, is that this book is a book of short stories that all connects, and it's about a journeying of souls as the human experience. And the story starts off with a character named Nevaeh, but the real character ends up being Hephzibah. But it really just talks about the relationships with people, the topic of boundaries, and what a person will allow and tolerate. So she talks about it very beautifully. And I wanted to read you all that summary, so you know the background of the book as you listen to the conversation. And then she also reads in the middle of the interview a poem from her second book titled, I Think These Are Love Poems. And the poem is called Perfect for Me. And though it is a different book, this poem ties into A Tale of Hezekiah and Hephzibah and also Toxic Tango, even though that's a different author, but it's kind of the same thing for this episode, guys. Because it says, when Nevaeh comes back as Candace and gets attached to this guy and his family, you know, Apollo and his family, even though it's not where she really needs to be, you know, she gets attached to him, even though it's not really where she needs to be or who she's supposed to be with. And in the interview, Terry and I talk about bringing people in seasons of life where you should have closed the door. There are people now with people in their circles, friends, family members, coworkers that they should have said goodbye to, but because you're dragging them along, neither of you can be everything you're meant to be or do what you're destined for. So I hope you guys enjoyed the interview. And I would also like to state that this is one of my first interviews, okay, for this podcast. So I don't want y'all to think that I'm getting worse at interviewing. The other episodes were actually a little later after Terry. I interviewed them after Terry. So it moves a little backwards. But I think everything had its rightful place in the lineup, and it's been a beautiful 4 weeks so far. So thank you, Terry, for rocking with me when my first time interviewing somebody, my first time doing a podcast, my first time doing everything. This is the first season, but it's also a lot of firsts for me just in many areas of my life and this project in general. So thank you, Terry, again. She's such a wonderful woman and a light that we need in the world. And she says that she is a fiction writer that believes in God. And so we talked about faith and interjecting God into what we write. And fuzzy audio or not, it's worth a listen to. Her story is worth being told. And I hope that you leave with something and you guys enjoy the rest of this episode. Okay.
To
get into it, would you mind just stating or telling us the title of your book, and then just telling us like the information just about it? You know, tell us about it a little bit.
So I have, today we're going to talk about A Tale of Hezekiah. And so it's really a short story, and it's really a journey through souls, right? With human experiences. So it highlights life for all of us, ups, down, times where we think it's the end, but it's really the beginning of something new or something better. So the story does start off where it talks about Nevaeh, and unfortunately she doesn't have to come, but through a soul journey, she gets to come back and kind of redo it and have that happy ending. So it's definitely something that I would probably encourage everyone to read, not just, I think some people believe that, you know, if I'm married, then I should probably read this book if I'm having married. It's really not just for women or men. It's really for everyone. And I think even teens could get a lot about from this book, because it takes you through really relationships with people, right? Positive relationships, and then just sometimes boundaries and what you'll tolerate and what you'll allow to happen. It is.
A lot of people don't have those boundaries. And I like what you said about that it's not just for a particular group of people. I think sometimes when a book is directly talking about something, people just automatically put it in a box and they say, oh, well, I can't read that. It's like you just said, it's for married people, or, oh, it's for older folks or something like that. But no, these are all lessons that we can learn, and we all have relationships with people in general. So I think that's beautiful how you put that.
Thank you.
Yes. And then, okay, so what, okay, I heard you say her name. It's Nevaeh, the main character?
So Nevaeh is actually a snippet, right? So for me, I would say is Hephzibah, because Hephzibah is the one that we're following through these earthly journeys. She does come through as Nevaeh, but then she gets to come back again, right? So some people get caught up on Nevaeh just because that's who you're introduced to. Is so sad and kind of short, but ultimately for me, I think it's really Hephzibah.
Okay. Oh, nice. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Glad I asked.
No worries.
And then how, okay, so that you kind of turned in, you kind of talked about it a little bit just now with Hephzibah. So because that his, the person's name is in the title. So how did you come to choose the title for the whole work?
So without sounding kooky, so Hephzibah in Hebrew means my delight is in her.
Okay, yes. Okay, I looked that up too before I came, so.
I like that. So for me, it was really, if you're going to have to really have Hephzibah without King Hezekiah, and you could, right? So I teetered with the title, and it's interesting enough, like one of the things where you go through all these groups and feedback and there's different things, sometimes people are like, well, you're doing two spiritual names, I wouldn't do that, and you're gonna close up an audience, and I'm like, you know what,
you just gotta put it out there.
Exactly, right? So I left that title just because I don't think you can have one without the other, even though it doesn't relate to the Bible 100%, but that's the gist of the title.
Okay, I like that. Yes. What inspired you for the idea for the book? Like, can you tell us some backstories, like to how you specifically came to write the book?
So I've written poems, stories in middle school. And interesting enough, when I was in high school, like, people in like my auto mechanics class would be like, hey, Terry, can you write a poem for me? Just like write poems for people, or even I would write like short stories.
Okay.
And people loved it. And one of the things with adulthood is you kind of stop doing the things that you love. So
I had a bunch of poems,
wrote them, put them in the notebook. I still have a ton of stories that are literally in boxes in my garage.
That's so real, though.
I speaking to you right now.
Yeah.
Stories do you have that are finished that are in the garage?
Right. But, oh, and sorry to cut you off real quick. Can you hear me clearly? I can't hear you clearly.
I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, a little bit.
Uh oh. Let's see if I can.
Sometimes it crackles up and then sometimes it's clear.
Okay. Is that better?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
So in 2017, my mentor at the time, Mrs. Lynette Pinkard, she was like, well, I'm going to be creating a writing group.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you're creative, so I want you to join my group. And I'm like, ma'am, I'm a mother. I work full time. I'm like, I don't have time for writing. And it was one of those things at the time where, and I wouldn't say she forced me, it was more of an accountability, like,
okay,
you have all these stories, you have all these things, what good is it doing in your garage?
Yeah.
And I sat there and I remember I was telling my husband, like, oh, Mrs. Lynette wants me to, you know, join her group.
Shout out to Miss Lynette.
Exactly. She still makes fun of me and laughs about it. She's like, tell me about all the things you don't want to do.
Right.
that a mentor or someone has to force you to do. But we started the writing group, and she travels because she does sign language interpretation.
Oh, nice.
And within like a month of the writing group starting, she had to travel. And she said, hey, do you think you could lead these groups? And I'm like, ma'am, I could never join the groups, let alone lead them.
Right, right. You're like, I don't have enough time to basically get in the group, and you're asking me to lead?
Exactly. So I start leading, and one of the things that I would do is just have people bring in the most recent works that they had, and we would read it together. And I had an idea of what I thought the story to be. So I wrote one chapter, read it to the group, and everybody loved it.
Oh,
and
wow.
Like week after week, they're like, yeah, we know everyone else has stories to read, but we want to know what happens next in Terry's story.
Mm-hmm.
And are they just trying to flatter me because I'm subbing for Miss Lynette? but everybody week after week was like, this story is really, really good.
Oh, wow.
And I just need to know what happens next.
Yeah.
So that was motivation to getting started.
Okay.
And that group, I would say, helped me to just finish it, because knowing that every single week, those folks in that room were going to be like, well, we need to know what happens next in your story.
Yes.
Definitely made me be conscious of the fact that I couldn't stop. I couldn't stick it in the garage and move on to the next, because people were waiting for a finished product.
Yeah, I love that. And then because it's like something outside of yourself, it became bigger than you.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I love also what you said just about adulthood, because you're older than I am. And I appreciate that, and just having conversations that, you know, we can all have. But something that you said about adulthood, that, you know, when you get there, people forget about, you know, the childness part of them, you know, the childlike part of them. And I think that's where some people find adulthood horrifying, or, you know, like, oh, then I'm just going to turn into this. And it's like, but you forget, because even, I mean, I'm 25, even at this age, I've had conversations with myself in the past months, like, man, I used to just write like this and not care. And I used to do this, and just, you have such a free thinking mind, and you just have to kind of almost kind of train yourself to bring it with you, you know?
Exactly. I think I don't know that it'll change culturally, right? Because you're an adult, you have bills, you have responsibility.
Yeah. Right.
But we shift our train of thought and say, okay, even though I am an adult, I do have these responsibilities, I still owe it to myself to maintain that creative side, right? Because something about adulthood that kills creativity.
Yeah.
And I think if
that's horrible. Kind of,
it is horrible, but it's the truth.
Yeah. That's so true, though. That is. And then, okay, so I was hearing you talk about the spiritual journey and the natural journey that takes place in this book. And I'm a believer myself, just in God. So I believe that the spiritual realm, right, is connected to the natural realm. They're separate, but they entwine. And so, like, what, like, did you face any hardships, like, bringing that journey to life, to write about the natural journey, to write about the spiritual journey? And then, like, yeah, so did you have any hardships writing it in your piece, in your book?
So, in short, yes.
Okay.
So, and I think because, and you framed it very well, right? The spirit is very real, but we live in the natural. And I think 75% of those of us that live in the natural would say that the spiritual does not intertwine, right?
But they're like, I can't see it. I don't believe it. Good luck.
Exactly. So for me, one of the things I think that was a huge challenge is, I believe in God wholeheartedly.
Yeah, same.
And there's no one that can tell me that God's not real.
Yeah.
Everyone has their own belief system. But for
sure,
me, I've experienced God in a way that for me to ever say that I don't believe would be silly.
Yeah, that's what I say. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think what was really, really challenging and just being really transparent is, a lot of the people in this writing group, they're believers. We had folks that were Jewish. We had some folks that were straight up atheists, and they do not believe in God. They think it's a figment of our imagination.
Or that they're like, yeah, you're crazy, but okay.
Yes. The silly children that believe in the big guy above.
Right. Somebody's watching over you. Okay.
So for me, it was really, and I wouldn't say it was difficult, but what challenging was there were times where I knew that I would question, like, do I put this extra Bible verse? Do I reference God in this way? Do I put the capital H, right? Because that's another thing. People are like, oh, your story has grammatical errors because you have capitalized. And I'm like, no, it's not a grammatical error. God is he with a capital H.
Right, right.
So in some cases, it was just really trying to be, one, respectful, and that I need to reflect God in it. So those folks were non-believers, I still needed to interject it. So ultimately, it was just really staying true to my faith. And what was funny in the end, and God does have a funny sense of humor, is every single non-believer in that room, they love this story more than the believers.
That's usually how it is.
It is.
They're like the ones that gravitate to it more. They're like, oh, yeah, no, nah, this is actually really great.
Exactly. And I like the fact that it allowed some of them to really question their fate, right? And some people don't believe in God, and it's more from a place of anger or resentment. So I think it helped people to really sit down and rethink the thoughts that they've developed over time.
Yeah, that's really good, the reflection part, because there's a lot of times, you know, where people are like, what God? Like, he wasn't here for this, this, and this. So no, I don't believe in that, you know? And I can see how they would, you know, have that outcome. And then to write a piece or to write a book, you know, as you have, and to be able to share that with, like you said, believers and non-believers, and have some of the non-believers gravitate towards it more. I mean, that's powerful enough, right? To know that. And I think that, you know, as believers, of God, like, you know, he speaks for himself, you know? So it's like, we're just kind of the messengers, but when we write it or sing it or whatever gift we have to kind of extend, you know, his story out there and his name, it's like people kind of, like you said, they reflect on that. They kind of think back and they're like, wow, or they have a new encounter with God, even that, you know, that they don't even realize.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then too, you said that, which I really liked, is that it's a faith journey, because it took a lot of faith. I mean, honestly, to write what you wrote, like, to, you know, people have a Christian Some people have a Christian background as writers or as artists, but and it's not obviously negative that people, you know, if you choose to bring it into your work or not, but when you actually put your craft, you know, in God and you weave that together just on the front lines, kind of as you have done, that takes a lot of faith. Because like you said, I mean, your title, you know, exactly is like you said, it's not 100% in lines with the Bible, but it's biblical, you know. And so to have that just on the front, like, boom, here I am, you know, that's really crazy. That's really dope. I really love that.
Thank you. And it was one of those moments, because when you write a story, it goes through editing, and everyone has, ultimately the final question that I had to ask myself is, if I interject God into this and people don't buy it, does it, like, the end result? The end result is I wouldn't have been true to myself. And the reality is, whether people buy it or not, and it's one of those things where I think God's time is always the best time. Might be that 10 years from now, this is a bestseller and it matters to those people. So it's all in God's hands. And I bet it'll do what he wants it to do.
Yeah, I believe that. So I love this whole concept of the book, and I can't wait to read the full thing after this. But you were discussing like the hardships and the unfairness of life in the book, and I love, obviously, like, I understand that, you know, in this faith journey, in this this Christ walk that you have, you know, there's always hope at the end. And so was it important for you to leave on a good note with this book? How did you leave it? And then just like you said, to have something people could sit and reflect on, like, was that a main goal coming in, like writing the book? Were you like, okay, this is how it's going to end. It's going to, I want people to leave with that hope feeling. Like, how did you feel about that?
So I definitely went into it wanting a happy ending. And the reason for that, like in movies and even stories in the last several years, rarely get a happy ending anymore. You might get a tease of a happy ending. Those happy endings do not exist anymore. So I definitely wanted readers to have that happy ending. But I really wanted people to consider this life, right? Like, what your day, are you making an impact? What can you do to make an impact? And really for non-believers, right? Because I've got a couple of my friends that are atheists, and I got them to read the book. Two out of, you know, a couple of them texted me like, oh my gosh, I'm crying. and they absolutely loved it. And it definitely did make them sit and really question, is God real? What am I going out on if he isn't or is? And just really ask themselves those questions. So I think ultimately, if I can really have people sit and really question not just this life, but potentially the next, and where their soul will ultimately end up, I think that will help.
And I think that's really key to what you said. And then too, I think when people or Christians like are sharing that work and wanting to get that certain message out, I think a lot of Christians forget to do it with love. You know, they kind of start with the soul. Where is your soul going to be? And then work backwards. and you don't get a lot of people that way. You know, you don't get them like, hey, I see you. I understand where you're coming from, but this is also my side. You know, instead of a lot of people are just like, this is what I got to say. And, you know, and you're going to go down. Like, it's like, oh God, oh Lord. I just think, oh God, I just be like, sometimes I'm like, I'm a Christian and I just have to come in and like do it my own way where it's still approved by God. Because some of these people, I just be like, I understand why you don't want to talk to us. Look at the representation we have, you know?
Exactly. So, and that's a very valid point. And one of the things that I always try to tell people is, if nothing else, we're human. And I think I'm one of those persnickety Christians where I will tell you I believe in God before religion. Because there's a big difference.
Very big.
And that's why you'll find in my story, you have Apollo that's an alcoholic that struggles, because in this life everyone has something that they're battling with. You could be perfect and look great on the surface, which is one of the characters has it all together but is deeply troubled. So I definitely didn't want to come at it from a judgmental place. It's just, here's something to consider, and what do you ultimately think or believe? And I don't want to give the story away, but even at one point, as Hepzibah transitions, one of the things gets to see is how many souls she was directly responsible for saving. They were actually not going to heaven, right? So even in that, I think that will help people to really stop and think. Again, not without the whole judgment or, oh, you're going to hell, but what is it?
And what do you want your next step to be, you know, after we get here? Because believe it or not, you're gonna, everyone questions where we're going after this, like, you know. And if you're, you know, and if, you know, depending on your faith and, you know, how in a line you are believing, you're like, no, I'm good, you know. So, but it's definitely a question, like you said, we all have as humans. And I think I like what you said, that you show people who are struggling, because a lot of Christians don't, you know, once they get to a certain point with the Lord, or, you know, saved or whatever, they don't want to talk about what they've been through to get there. You know, and that's for me, that's a disservice, because if you're not sharing with somebody basically your testimony, you know, if you were drinking, smoking, doing whatever, you know, and then not to be able to share that with an unbeliever and be like, no, I was good since the time I came here. Exactly. I've been clean. I don't know what you're talking about. I believe in God. Like, oh my God. Like, really? Like, 2 years ago, you sure that wasn't you on the side of the street? Like,
I saw you at the club. Stop it.
Right. You wasn't having sex with Ramon too? Like, can we not talk about these things? Like, I understand you clean and stuff now and you right, but dang, can you at least be honest about the journey? So, I love what you added.
I love that you even referenced that, because that is one of my pet peeves. We started talking about that early, is people not being transparent, right? So if marital issues and your marriage is perfect now, that is great, but there's a thousand women that might need your guidance and counsel, and you trying to keep it a secret isn't going to help, right? The people that are at the club on Friday and Saturday, and then at church on Sunday. And that's the hypocrisy in itself. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. Remembering that we are human. Not being judgmental, because I want to tell you, as much as I am saved, believed in God, let someone cut me off in 15 minutes and I'm a Christian woman, right? So it's just ultimately get to know God first. Don't look man, don't look to your pastor, women. Even now there's a big scandal with one of the pastors, right? And I'm sitting here watching people so perplexed, and I'm like, you're perplexed that a man would have a manly earthly experience, right? Like
exactly. We can slide back just like anybody else.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love that. So you had a piece prepared for us, or a story that you were going to read, called Perfect for Me.
Yes. So Perfect for Me is actually a series of poems that's It's that story, or that book is titled, I Think These Are Love Poems. And when you read them, you'll understand why I say I think they're love poems.
Okay. See, right where you're talking right now is so clear.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Before it goes in and out, but yeah, I just wanted to listen
up, you know. So I'll read Perfect for Me.
Okay.
I met him and instantly I knew he was perfect for me. He was everything I dreamed and more than I would need. You see, he was perfect for me. When I stared at him, I felt like I was in a dream. He was the perfect specimen, and he wanted to be with me. Perfect for me, but here's the trouble, you see. Each time I lay down to sleep, when I would dream, God would tell me, sweetheart, please let him be. You think he is perfect, but he isn't, you see. although I made him and he's perfect for me, he isn't nearly perfect, and I don't want you to see what cannot be unseen. God kept asking me, pleading, saying, daughter, please. He is not of me. I just need you to release.
I love that.
Thank you.
Yes. And that oh, wow. That's a poem that it talks about a topic that a lot of women go through, a lot of men, a lot of people, right? Not bringing things with us that don't need to be brought with us. You know, attaching ourselves to things that we don't need to be attached to, not only people, but just, you know, material things or that of that sort. And you know that it's not for you in your life. And you're continuously trying to bring it on to like each season that you have, because you're like, no, but it's going to be this way. You know, exactly. And that gets people through a lot of tunnels and hardships.
Yeah, because we always want, or we always think that what we have in mind is best, right?
Yeah.
Not that God intended for us, not that his ways are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
We know what's ultimately right for us.
Yeah.
And I think that one, everyone can relate to that. And for me, I had before my husband and I have been married for, we've been together for 20 years, been married for 17. Before my husband, I would have told you that my ex and I were going to get married, have a husband, going to be the perfect person.
Yeah.
And God had to show me, like, I know this is what you want, but it's not for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that every single day.
Yeah. And people don't, I mean, we don't talk about how painful that is. You know, I think some people just, you know, have like your guidelines. They're just like, oh no, it's toxic for you, let it go. But like when you're in it, you know, it's very difficult to be like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be. So to realize that and to notice those signs, and you know, to really take care of you, and to, you know the situation and be like, yeah, this isn't serving me. This isn't, you know, lifting me up. It's kind of bringing me down. I haven't moved forward. I'm still in the same place as before. And then to just kind of reevaluate and, you know, be able to step out of that situation is really powerful. And I think that poem, Perfect for Me, really speaks to that.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. So I just have a few more questions. Are you solely a Christian writer? Do you label yourself that way, or just, you know, how is that?
So I say society loves to put labels on things.
Always.
There's.
Yeah.
So I think while I'm trying to, so for me, ultimately, I'm a fictional writer that believes in God.
Okay, love
and
that.
And my writing might not always be classified Christian.
Yeah.
I'll always interject God into everything that I write. Mm-hmm. So whether it's something subtle, whether it's a Bible verse, God will always be present in what I do.
I love that. And that, I don't know, that just, wow, that just kind of reminded me of, like, because I say the same thing about certain things that I do. And I was telling my friend, like, when believers do that, it kind of reminds me of like sewing, you know, like you have a big piece that you're creating, but you're weaving, you know, purposefully weaving God into what you're doing, into the overall work. And I really love that, because that speaks to the faith, and that just speaks to, you know, the discernment that you have to put those little details in there that's like, you know, a believer could know, or, you know, unsubconsciously speaks to a person that doesn't believe. You know, they're like, I wonder why that passage was a little strong there. People do that. They're like, that was a little deep. I don't know why, but because I sewed it in there for you.
Exactly. Do you want to pick up your Bible?
A little tip, a little nugget there. It's like a treasure hunt.
Exactly. Or you could use it to validate, right? Did she write that it's perfect?
Right. Oh man, I love that. And then okay, so two last questions. Where can people find your book?
So there's the easiest place would probably be to go to terrylopez.org.
Okay.
And that's TERY Lopez. bookbabybooks.org. Okay. And it'll take you to a book baby bookshop. Yeah. But it's also available on Amazon, Kindle, any of those book services, you'll be able to find it there. But okay. Because I'm obviously not published, mm-hmm. I should say self-published.
Yes.
It's important to me to be able to recoup some of what went into this. So
yes. If
you go to lopez.org, there's less transactional fees and all that stuff. So
yes. Okay. Tale of Hezekiah and Hephzibah. Yes, by Tori Lopez. And then last thing, can you tell us three things that you want to tell Black women writers?
So the first thing I want to tell Black women writers is you can do it.
Yeah.
Not quit. Yeah. And once you open the door, do not close it. And again, this is just my own personal experience, separate from my mentor. There's a lot of people, I won't name anyone, yes. I don't want it to be like, is she throwing shade? But there's a couple that I've reached out to because they've been bestsellers. And mm-hmm. whether it was, can I have 15 minutes of your time? I just want to vet this by you, want to figure out the best to put the book, or mm-hmm. just get overall feedback. And I would say the majority was not very welcoming, wasn't really willing to share information.
Yeah.
And those that were, they wanted to do it at cost. And I get it. If you're an editor and that's your full-time business, I complete that. But for me personally, if you come to me and you say, Terry, I'm interested in writing a book, can I pick your brain for 15 minutes? I'm going to let you pick my brain for 15 minutes. Yeah. I'm going to tell you all the things that didn't work for me and all the pitfalls that I want you to avoid. So that's something that I would really like to see, is people truly lifting up the next person.
Yeah. Even having more, like, you know, how everybody has what, Comic Cons and all the stuff for everybody else. It's like, we don't have enough literary, I don't know, groups, conferences, like panels, just places where we can come together. And it's like, hear from people who've made it and who are making it, to be like, hey, I just want to let you guys know, like, don't give up, you know, continue on, and these are my notes on my personal journey. Like, even that would just be helpful.
I agree.
So I thank you for that. And thank you for this interview, because it has really been lovely. I need to bring you back.
No worries. Thank you. I would welcome it. And just remember, keep going, don't stop.
Yes, thank you. You as well.
Thank you, my dear.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.
I hope you guys enjoyed today's Feature Friday. So if you've made it this far, thank you for listening. It means the world to me. I know the audio was a little fuzzy, but we made it. I worked hard to make sure you guys could still get the meat of the interview with Terry Lopez in her book titled A Tale of Hezekiah and Hephzibah. That is available for purchase at her website, terrylopez.org. That's TerryLopez.org, for just $3.99. So super easy to purchase and super easy to support Black women. I love talking to faith-filled people and other believers as much as I welcome non-believers. And I just thank Terry for coming on to the podcast. It means a lot to me when people jump on the bandwagon, when they invest and believe in the vision with me. I don't take that lightly. I treasure it. And the women that have been here with me for the first season, voice actors and writers and everybody else, and to you all that have been listening, have helped make this possible. I believe that God, you know, gave me this project because I had no dream or plan to do a podcast. And then one day, after having a conversation with my mom, it just came on my heart so heavy that I just jumped into action. And so now we're all here together. So thank you. And I just want to put it out there because I do believe in this project, and I believe in our community and our stories, and I'm just believing and trusting in God that we will have a successful, you know, season two. It's going to be fun. It's going to be bigger. It's going to be better. And not only do I wish blessings in my own business ventures this year, but that you all are blessed in your businesses and your finances and your homes and your families. I want that for you. I don't want to be the only one thriving when we can all thrive together. Lastly, don't forget to subscribe and add to your favorites, review this episode or the podcast, and share with anyone you can. And stay tuned for Wednesday's episode and Friday's episode next week, because next week is our last week. You can follow me on Instagram at Lauren Tate Books, Facebook at Lauren Tate, or if you don't have any social media and want to send me a message or a voice recording, you can email it to me at tatelauren72@gmail.com. That's TateLauren72@gmail.com. And if you just want to know more about me, you can visit my website, laurentatebooks.com, which is also where all my contact information is. And you guys know, whether we have a little bit of people or a lot of people, The Lost World of Short Stories isn't going anywhere. And just never forget that you are loved, you are important, and your story is worth being told. Thank you.